Hey, it's Errol on iHeartRadio. New York Times bestselling author Brad Taylor served more than 20 years in the U.S. Army, including 8 years in 1st Special Forces Operational Detachment Delta, commonly known as Delta Force. Taylor has written 9 novels in the Pike Logan series, and it's always been clear that Pike, Jennifer, and all the members of the extra-legal counterterrorist unit known as the Task Force are staunchly in the right. Until now. We are unplugged and totally uncut with the author of The Forgotten Soldier, Brad Taylor. Welcome back to iHeartRadio, dude.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
It's amazing how many people around the world gravitate toward your writing. It has been so fascinating to watch you grow since the last time we've talked.
Yeah, it's been quite a shock to me, to be honest with you.
I mean, as that writer and as that person that keeps a really close eye on the events of the world, what is that like for you to grow like that?
It's been a dream come true. It's like lightning struck. I mean, I now do exactly what I want to do.
Now, when you say that, one of the things I wanted to talk about today was because you've been in Iraq and in Afghanistan. Did you write while you were over there, or is this something that happened once you came back home?
It was something that happened once I came back home. I always wanted to write a book. I just never had the time. I spent, over 20 years in the military doing one deployment after another. And I left a special mission unit at Fort Bragg, and I was actually doing teaching at the Citadel in Charleston, South Carolina, which is, I just had a lot of time on my hands. It's, those classes are rinse and repeat, and I had tons of time on my hands. And I said, I think I'll do my next goal and write a book. And I thought it would sit on the bedside table, but it sold.
I have been down to that Citadel so many times, sir. That is one of the most unbelievable places on the planet. There is an energy there that is unexplainable.
Yeah, it is.
Do you find that the events of 2015 in Charleston, will you find anything like that in your stories in the moments ahead?
No, not you're talking about Dylann Roof and the church shootings and all that.
Yeah, because you're always so one-on-one with what's going on in the world. And I mean, you're like a magnet when it comes to news. And it's almost like you're a George Orwell of 2015-16.
Yeah, and people say that, but the truth of the matter is I still do a lot of security consulting, and I keep my pulse on what's going around the world. And in America, we're kind of cloistered, and it only makes news when it blows up big time. But it's been bubbling for a long, long time.
Did you know that being a part of Delta Force, that you would run the risk of doing what you are doing? In other words, when you write, do you ever find out that I can't talk about this? Or do you just say, I experienced it, therefore I can write it?
No, not, I mean, I just certainly, nothing in my books is anything that I've done because it's all classified.
Right.
And I have the books read by tons of people who are still active duty just because of that. Because there's only so many ways to skin the cat, and sometimes I may put something in there that I didn't know about because it didn't exist when I was serving, but it may exist now. And they'll come back and say, take that out, and I do.
Your book, The Forgotten Soldier, really ignites a part of American history where we swore that we would never forget again. But yet, people that walk by it at the bookstore are going to go, wait a second, I want to know what this book is about. That's good marketing for you to ignite the imagination like that.
Yeah, actually, the theme of the book is, what does right mean? And the Forgotten Soldier is basically a soldier gets killed in Afghanistan. We know who did it, or at least who financed it, but the people who financed it happen to work for a government we're allied with. So they're saying, hey, too bad, forget about him. He's just one soldier. We can't upset the apple cart. And one man takes it upon himself to say, well, I'm not going to forget about him.
What is it like for you as a writer when these stories are coming to life? Because I know that when you go into these scenes, it's you've got to be reliving it over again. Is it hard on your mind, body, and soul to do this, or is it an escape for you?
It's more of an escape. There's certain scenes that I've written that were hard to write but needed to be in the book. But for the most part, it's more of an escape. It's liberating.
When you're called to write a book, is it a moment where you sit there and you go, okay, this is how I'm going to lay it all out? Or do you have to do a lot of research? And I know that you've traveled all over the world and stuff, being with our U.S. military, and thank you for your time for the country. But how is it that you're able to be so pinpoint on everything that you're doing?
I do an enormous amount of research. I mean, I do it for, like I said, I still do security consulting, so I'm constantly reading. I spend probably 2 hours a day covering news feeds from all over the world, basically. And then when I get what I call a framework of what the theme is going to be, what the plot line is going to be, I'll then travel to the country in question and get what we used to call sights, sounds, smells of the battlefield and run around seeing what it looks like over there. For this book, I went to Crete and Greece and everywhere else. I'm actually halfway through the 10th book, Ghosts of War, and I just got back from Poland, Slovakia, and Austria, so it's a lot of research.
When do you find time to write, dude?
I know. Actually, the book's due here soon, and I'm only about halfway done.
I mean, that's some serious discipline to be able to do that.
Yeah, it is, and it's. I finally decided that I actually am a writer, and so I actually have an office now. It used to be I'd write wherever I was.
When you're putting everything down into the book, and it's only because, first of all, I love your stories. My father was so addicted to military stories, and I just follow in his footsteps and trying to understand. This is how I live the military, is through, like, reading your books. Do you ever think about those people around the world that do the same thing?
Well, definitely. Actually, one of the primary, when I wrote the first book, it was a story of redemption, but I wanted to show the fact that too often in Hollywood and other places, you know, it's the lone operator running around out there, and if these damn bureaucrats would get off my back, I'd use a drill bit in this guy's kneecap and get the information, and it's not true. Every operator's got a moral compass, and he does it for the right reasons, and he has an impact. Sometimes you make decisions that are not right. Sometimes things go wrong, and you've got to live with that decision, and I wanted to put that on the page.
Kind of in a weird way, is the Pike Logan series a viral view of up close and personal when it comes to war?
Yes, certain parts of it are certainly. Some of the impacts that happen with the people in the task forces are doing combat operations, it definitely is.
When soldiers come into the studio, and we have a channel that's called Purple Heart Radio, and when they come into the studio, dude, I wish you could see, maybe I need to take pictures of these soldiers and send them to you, but they levitate to your books. Do you see that as being a healing for them or just an opportunity to make a connection?
I think it's more along the lines of getting it right, to be honest with you. I don't read my own genre because, cops probably don't read police procedurals and doctors probably don't read medical thrillers. 9 times out of 10, it's just not right. You get within 10 pages, you're like, that never happened, and so you put the book down. So it's probably why they do it.
Now, counterterrorism, there's a movie that's coming out. It's called 13, and they really put a lot of focus on that. It's almost like The Invisible Soldier. Do you find that is where the growth of our protection is when they hire the soldiers to come in on a different level? And will you start writing in stories such as that?
I think that if you're talking about the contracting world.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I do that right now. And the truth of the matter is that it's been going on for eternity, and it's just now made the news because of what happened. But 90% people hear contracting, they immediately think Blackwater doing evil stuff. But 99% of the contracting is literally, I've contracted a bunch of Pakistanis to cook meals. We do not, as a nation, outsource any national mission strategic level stuff to any contractors. They're always in a support role. And the people that were in Benghazi were actually in a support role. They just have to be put on the X.
It's one of the most brilliant experiences when they come in and talk with these contract. And I hate saying it because it's more than that in my heart, because they're still protecting our country. But to hear their stories, to listen to their journeys and stuff, you know. But yet at the same time, Brad, you don't call yourself a hero.
Well, no. I mean, people always say thank you for your service, and I really appreciate it. But in the back of my head, I'm like, I got paid, right? I volunteered for this. I could have left at any time. I chose to stay.
When you're writing, are you down there like on Folly Beach or anything like that in Charleston, or do you still hang out in that area to write?
Oh, sure. I go, I've got a lot of favorite writing spots. Not Folly, I do more Isle of Palms than Folly, but I certainly do.
I love Isle of Palms, but they got that big sign across that bridge saying, don't swim here, but you have to do it.
Yeah, well, actually, when I was a kid, all my relatives are from Charleston, which is why I ended up here. I grew up in Texas, but Breach Inlet's where they have these huge sinkholes and people drown all the time, so my grandmother would never let me get more than ankle deep.
I always thought that a great war scene, and it can be for any war, is if you've gone out far enough into the harbor, there's that rock wall that's out there, and then once you get beyond then the waves. Have you been out that far in the harbor?
Oh, sure, yeah. Out to Fort Sumter and all that.
Oh, yeah, because there's like a story waiting to be born out there. And then do you ever find yourself wanting to write a futuristic, like a potential a war scene or anything like that would happen on the American shores?
Yeah, actually, I'm kicking around an idea right now for, well, Ghost of War, it's going to be in the European continents, but it's basically, I've moved away from Islamic terrorism, and it's more along the lines of the fault line of the old Cold War with Putin, and it's a much bigger tapestry than I'm writing now.
See, that's the artist that I love reading about, because that's the guy that's always got his pulse, I mean, his finger on the pulse of what's going on, because it's almost like you can see things the rest of us can't.
I appreciate you saying that. My wife says I'm Walter Mitty. I just have a wild imagination because I'm always making up stories to get out of work.
How do you keep it together, man, when you've got so many stories that are needed, but yet you've got to stay in touch with the stories you've written in the past?
Yeah, that's the hardest part, is because I'm writing a series, you know, the novels are series, so the characters have got to grow. You can't ever write a book that's the same book you just wrote, just a different, you know, this one's in Thailand, now this one's in Poland. It's got to be completely different. But on the other hand, you still have to have a touchstone where the reader who's comfortable in your world wants to go back to that world.
Do you ever find yourself with your characters and stuff as they're growing for this, that you become disgruntled with them too, and you're like, oh, I just want to get rid of this character, but you know you can't?
No, I haven't had that problem. I have actually had the other problem. I've gotten rid of characters because in the real world, you do combat operations, people die. And I've killed off characters that now I'm like, man, I wish I'd have never killed him.
Brad Taylor, why aren't you doing the reading on your stories in when it comes to like books on tape and stuff like that? Because you have such a fantastic voice that to hear your emotion and through your experiences and stuff.
Well, we're actually doing a change with the audiobooks. Before, we didn't do it in-house. It's kind of like Hollywood. I sold the rights to a third party to do the audiobooks, and I have no control over who does the readings or anything like that. But now we're doing it in-house. We'll see what that entails. I'm not really sure yet.
It would be so fascinating to hear the passion of your words. I mean, when you're reading from this book, I can hear your voice as a writer, but I would love to hear your voice as you're reading it.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. Now, that's something to look into, certainly.
And that's the dynamics that you bring to your writing, and that right there, sir, is a skill.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet, man. You have yourself a brilliant day today, sir.